Nerd Appropriate presents exclusive coverage of the BioWare base recorded live at PAX East 2013.
All right, welcome to the Rated NA podcast for nerdappropriate.com. This is the sixth in the series of BioWare panels that we're bringing from the BioWare base at PAX East 2013. What are we talking about this time, Scott?
So this panel was recorded on Sunday, and it's called Voice Acting Tips, Tricks, and How to Get Started. So this panel features Raphael Sabarge, who you may know as Cade Nalenko from Mass Effect, or as Karthanasi from Knights of the Old Republic, or as the good Dr. Hopper from Once Upon a Time. So the purpose of this panel was to sort of give you a look behind the glass into voice acting and have an opportunity to ask questions about how to break into voice acting, and just a good discussion about voice acting in general.
It was a really fun panel. We are huge, if you haven't listened to our show before, we're huge supporters of voice acting in general, and we've had a lot of the cast on the show before, and they're all awesome people, and they're all insanely talented. So if you want to hear some of that, Hillary, why don't you tell them where they can find us and maybe look up some of those old episodes?
Nice. So you can always find us at nerdappropriate.com, of course, but you can find us on Twitter at nerdappropriate, or like us on Facebook, and that's at nerdappropriate. Mm-hmm. If you want to email us directly, which we totally encourage you to do, maybe not some bad things and maybe just only good things. I don't know.
I say mostly bad things.
Mostly bad things. Please, I encourage you sending me bad things.
Yeah.
My name is Hillary at nerdappropriate.com.
Yeah, so be sure to email Ash at nerdappropriate, or Matt, Scott, or Hillary with one L, just our names, and at nerdappropriate.com. And if you're looking at the screen right now, you'll probably see a big shiny subscribe button, which I wholeheartedly encourage you to click. You will have all of these amazing BioWare panels in your feed like magic. And you can also see some of our new, or listen to some of our newer podcasts, which are coming out weekly. So yeah, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and
definitely
and be off.
Definitely do. You've got, well, there's two more BioWare panels coming, so click and listen.
All right, so here we go. Voice acting tips, tricks, and how to get started with Raphael Sabarge.
Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us here at the BioWare base this afternoon on the final day of PAX. Who's had a great PAX so far? Woo! We love getting out to come to cities like this, come to Boston, get to talk with all of our great fans. So thank you for giving us part of your time coming out and seeing us. My name is Chris Priestley. Some of you may know me as Evil Chris. I'm part of the community team at BioWare. With me today, we're going to be doing a panel about VO. Now, VO stands for voiceover. It is the acting in our games. With us today, along with some members of the BioWare team, we are very fortunate to have Mr. Raphael Sabarge, the voice actor for Cade Nalenko. Without actually yelling the name out, if you know, put your hand up. What has he ever played a character in another BioWare game?
Yes! Yes!
Okay, on the count of three, say his name. One, two, three.
Karthanasi!
There you go. Karthanasi, correct. He was in Knights of the Old Republic. So with me today, along with Mr. Sabarge, we have Preston Watomniak. Preston is the senior designer on the Mass Effect franchise.
The lead designer on the Mass Effect
franchise. I never know the hierarchy stuff, so I apologize. Tell you what, Mike, why don't you introduce yourself so I don't get that one wrong?
Okay. Depending on the day, it's your lead design for Dragon Age or creative director for Dragon Age, which basically Preston and I are buddies.
And that's Mike Laidlaw. And then at the end of the table, we have John Dumbro.
I'm senior writer on Mass Effect franchise.
And we're here to talk a little bit about voice acting. Now, BioWare's been very fortunate. We've worked with many great actors and actresses over the years who voice our games. And we're especially appreciative for Raphael for coming along with us. Maybe, Raphael, you could start us off with just kind of how you got involved, first of all, as a voice actor yourself, and then moving into, you know, video game work.
Yeah. To you guys, where do you start? I guess, you know, look, I'm... I started in the theater. I'm really a theater actor. I began in New York City, and I began doing, I started when I was very young at 4 on Sesame Street, but that just was a quirk. Grew up in New York, grew up sort of doing theater from the age of about 7, and really, when people ask me about voice work, generally I sort of say that theater has been the best training. Primarily because of what's required in terms of really sort of doing it, you know, sometimes 8 times a week, and really what's involved in creating an arc of a character, beginning, middle, and then that sort of remarkable thing that happens when they say curtain and you go out and you're in front of an audience and you have to make it so tonight. What's involved in that is... There's just thousands of hours that go into sort of figuring out how to do that. You know, in terms of the voice work, that was sort of a natural extension. I mean, a lot of us who work in the theater can't make a living in the theater, so we end up doing commercials. And, you know, I started doing TV commercials. I did a Dr. Pepper commercial when I was 13. And then just sort of began, you know, doing voiceover as an extension of that, wherever you could get hired, you know, just sort of going in and auditioning. There were a couple of things that came along in terms of as video games started and they were looking for actors and they were saying, no, we don't want VO talent, which was kind of a particular, you know, hi, welcome to Joe's or whatever it is, you know, that kind of, which is what was sort of more the norm. They began to say, no, we want actors. We want people who can bring sort of a, to humanize, you know, the script that John writes. And what happened was I was sort of, I guess, as you say, it's sort of the beginning of this emerging industry, and began doing video games. And it was sort of a delight and sort of quirky and, wow, isn't that interesting? And this is so fun. And you get to just sort of stand there and kind of find your way. And, I for those of you who were in the last panel, I mean, I'll say this again, but the way I got Mass Effect is, you know, by auditioning for it. It's a funny story. My son, he's now 8, but I had dropped him off at at his preschool, and his preschool teacher one day said to him, Django, his name is Django, Django, your dad looks familiar. What does he do? And he thought for a second. He said, he auditions, which is really what we do as actors. I mean, we really—that's what you do. You're auditioning all the time, and you sometimes get offers for things if you get really, really, really lucky, and get to that place where things start to come your way. But invariably, it's a lot of walking into rooms and, you know, again, making it so right here. And learning how to do that, and there's a lot involved in that. I mean, I can talk a little bit about that to the degree that people want some of the specifics, because I do teach as well, and it's a great privilege to be able to give back. So I enjoy that enormously. But in terms of how one becomes, you know, I mean, I pinch myself all the time. I'm just so grateful to be a part of this, you know, incredibly august bunch of men and women who have put together this spectacular game and this universe. And I mean, I have a lot of friends who are other characters in the game, and we see each other at conventions, or, you know, we have the same agent and we run into each other, and it's fun, you know, and it's a lot of just wonderful, as you said, a lot of really wonderful actors. I wish I could sort of tell you, excuse me, I wish I could tell you, you know, this is how you do it. I mean, there's some specifics that I maybe can answer in question form, in this case, I have to say I'm very fortunate that they saw something in me and that we were able to kind of take this journey together.
Awesome. That's great. Maybe just because you called out John, you could talk a little bit. I imagine that when you first come up with a character, it has to be harder thinking to yourself, you know, what sort of voice will this person have, as opposed to writing a sequel where you have somebody like Raphael or whatever already in the role that you can say, oh, okay, I know how he works now. You know, maybe you could talk a little about
creating the role. So I came into BioWare on Mass Effect 3 at the beginning. So in particular, I wrote Garrus and Javik. So Garrus was easy in the sense that Brandon Keener, who does the voice for Garrus, had pretty much already figured out who that character was, and it was very easy to write, and I've already got it in my head, and I just know when I'm writing a Garrus line if it feels right, because I can hear Brandon Keener's voice in my head on that. We all tend to write dialogue for other squad mates as well. So if I'm writing, you know, any of the existing ones, Tally, Liara, it's not that difficult. So the new characters, though, so Javik, for instance, there's no voice in my head, so I just have to start kind of imagining the things Javik would say, the things he wouldn't say, and then you start getting a lot of auditions in. We'll go out with a test script that our Caroline Livingston will put out. She's our VO director. And we just get lots and lots of auditions back, as you mentioned, right? That's what actors do. And you're just looking for the one that's hitting that tone you imagined. And in our case with Javik, it, strangely enough, it was not the accent I imagined. If you've played Javik the Prothean, then you know that that may not be exactly what you expected a Prothean to sound like. But the more we heard it, the more he's reading the lines, it just stuck. It was like, well, why not? I think he's Kenyan, so that's what you're hearing there. But he just nailed the delivery, the emotion, and every other part of it. So now, once I started getting that in my mind, we had him in mind early enough that I could start setting the tone and making sure all the dialogue fit, and it just was this wonderful discovery, really, that of this voice you weren't expecting with the Prothean, and I think it worked out rather well.
So, well, maybe more for Mike or Preston. When you're creating games and, you know, you're working with your teams and everything, a lot of the time we're working with humans. And is it easier to kind of create a human character as opposed to creating, you know, maybe dwarves or aliens or whatever it might be?
I'd say, just quickly, humans are harder. Because there's the uncanny valley. They have to look, they're harder to make look real, they're harder to make sound real, because aliens and other species and what like that, there's less there for you to latch on to know whether something is right or wrong. And if there's quirks that are introduced, like the accent that Tally does, which she made up, then... that's just becomes part of that species. It's like a quirk that the actor introduced that is now just, that's what that is. But for a human, that makes it a lot more problematic.
So. Probably the challenge we face when we do, less on D.A.B. than what you guys had, because you have a wider array of aliens. Probably the only really hard part to alien is if they have a weird speaking thing, right? The Elcor being the number one example. And I think actually that's my fault. So sorry.
okay, why is it your fault?
I wrote the first Elcor, Volus, and Hanar.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, you're...
Surprise. Remember that 3 months I was on Mass?
I do not.
Yeah. Okay.
So blocked out of the memory.
I have 4 months. I have 4 months when we started Mass when I had twins.
I
literally have like 6 months of total blackout. I don't remember anything. Like nothing. No decisions. No one who was on the project.
Well, thank you for the great leadership showed.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Anyway, so when you have that and you have like the Elcor were really challenging. I know. Because it was hard to figure out whether their whole, like, you know, with derision, like, what exactly the hell does that mean? And so we actually have a really, we have a very robust system, and I hopefully it still works for you, where we do comments that go directly onto the script that are printed out so that the voiceover actor and the director get those. And so when we first started doing internal voiceover, that was on Jade Empire, and that was, I was working as lead writer at the time, so I was working with Caroline to figure that out, and our comments were terrible. It'd be like, fast. And I imagine that's not a lot to work with. Okay, then, you're going to get a little bit, you get the micro machines guy, right? And so what we've started doing is using those now as a means by which we give the context. So there'll be the header where we say, you know, this character is an Elcor. Be aware that they just cannot express vocal range. They only have a very narrow band. Ergo, whenever the character says this, this is what he's trying to do. We put that at the top. And then we you know, kind of on each line, we're like, what he's trying to say in reality is the following, right? And that's a lot of ways how with the aliens, what if they talk kind of weird, or this one refers to himself for the Hanar and stuff. We do extensive comedy to try and do that. And then what you find is that fairly quickly, you know, Caroline knows it very quickly before we even go in there. The remote directors get to know it very quickly, and if the character's big enough, the actor will pick it up very fast, and then they start to own it, right? They get add their own twist to it or elements, and that's the part where it becomes really exciting and collaborative.
Yeah, well, Raphael, I remember you in the last panel you were mentioning that when it comes to actually doing the voice recording, you're kind of by yourself. You know, we think of playing the games, you know, oh, he's talking with Shepard, Shepard's in the room, and then Tali's over there and everything. But that's not really the case. You guys get kind of locked away in a little glass case with really just somebody on the other side of a microphone.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, I can't remember the name of it, though. What is the system that you worked out where you actually play the where you actually play the
Veda.
This is a really cool thing that they developed. It's their own unique system, but, you know, when you have a conversation, normally, you know, you talk and then you listen and someone else talks and you have the response, right? Well, remember, if you're recording, you're just doing all of your lines, essentially, without any response. But BioWare was able to develop a system called Veda, which is, I guess, your own unique proprietary software, which is really cool, fantastic for the voice actors, where if they have my friend Armin Shimmerman, for example, who recorded, or Kimberly and I wouldn't, but essentially, you know, Jennifer Hale. Or, I like Kimberly so much. She's a dear friend, so I love her. But essentially, if you have her lines or whosoever lines and you then interact with them, Veda is able to essentially play the cue, as it were, for you. And then you're able actually to, you know, again, in your imagination, play to someone or have some of the timing of actually having a conversation, which, again, is unique in my experience in terms of video game recording. And, you know, again, look, BioWare really came to this with obviously an extraordinary aesthetic and a desire to make a spectacular story. But they also, I mean, from the acting department, clearly cared about actors and clearly cared about the kind of sort of dialogue and or interactions that were based in relationships and that had more complexity to them. And that wasn't just screaming, you know, and I've done so many of those other games, those screaming games. And I'm actually, you know, I've been in rooms huddled with other actors where actors say, I'm not doing those jerks again. I can't talk for 3 days, you know, cause you really do rip up your voice. In this case, BioWare really cares about, you know, some of that one would say subtler, in this case, we all know more meaningful stuff. It's what defines this universe in a way, is because it's what clearly has bonded the Mass Effect universe, that is the fans with the game, because of their emotional connection to these characters. And these ladies and gents understand that. And so they both have written that and obviously have been able to create, you know, from the very beginning, faces that actually had more, much more subtlety and responsiveness than you would normally have. And then, you know, in terms of kind of developing this Veda concept, which is actor-friendly, you know, it's not always the case when you're recording. You know, just get them in, get them out, you know, is sometimes what you feel. And so as a result, again, they reap the benefit. We all reap the benefit of that. You know, we're better. It's better for them. It's better for you, most importantly. And that's, again, just such a testament to this company.
Awesome. Well, thinking directly about Mass Effect for a second, and, you know, playing Caden in the game, you know, one of the early romance characters, do you find as an actor, especially when there is nobody to play off, I mean, it's great we have these systems and everything for you, but is it easy to romance a script?
Okay, so let me see if I can get into this one. Here's the thing. A lot of voiceover acting, when you think about it, I guess, is you... it's not about a sound, right? I mean, a lot of times when people sort of at least... I mean, there are people that are incredible at mimicking other actors. I'm not that guy. I have friends who are incredible at it. They do imitations of me, and I... It's funny and it's wonderful, but where I connect with the material is I essentially, and this is what I talk about a lot also with my students, is that I believe that it's a combination of things. It's the writing, obviously primary, with then the combination of the actor that marries that. So it's the actor's hopes and dreams and fears and feeling and heart that comes through and marries with the writing, where 1 + 1 = 3, where you then create an entirely other thing. But if you just come in and you just deliver the writing, that is saying the lines, or you think that somehow if you say it a certain way, or if you have in your head a sort of a sound of something like he'll just sound this way. Now, clearly, obviously, different characters, like when I did EverQuest, or some people call it EverCrack. There's lots of different sounding. I did 14 different characters, so each one has a sound, right? But at the same time, then you have to blast through the sound and get to something where you're again connecting to the interior of something which has to come from you. It's sort of, you know, as they say, what is it when you pass, but your body is 21 grams lighter than when you were in your body or something, right? So that whatever that essential 21 grams is that defines who you are, is what then I believe translates through the writing and connects and gives it life. You know, if you're as lucky as I am to be, you know, essentially have this incredible engine behind you that is BioWare and all this, the thousands of people that work slaving for years, 2-3 years to make it beautiful and spectacular. Wowee, that's amazing. But you know, again, it is a combination of things. And so, in terms of your question, in terms of the romancing, you know, when I'm so-called romancing, I'm not thinking about romancing. I'm connecting to something that is very meaningful to me. And with that, then connecting that with the writing, and then it kind of, as they say, marries up, and then something gets communicated. That's, to me anyway, if you think about any actor that you love, and there's so many that I, you know, that I actors that inspire me and that I am moved by and recognize my own humanity through them. It's done so because if there's something about them that comes through in the writing, something about them that actually, I don't know, it's...
We actually count on that as writers. Like, there comes a point where, like you say, initially it's just the writing. We haven't defined the character. Like, initially we didn't know what Caden sounded like because we never recorded the line. Yeah. But by the time we got to the sequels, and if you've played Citadel DLC, I think that's really a celebration of the friendship Shepard has with the characters. And virtually none of that would have been possible if the actors hadn't, like you said, that synthesis, that relationship formed where I knew that in the case of Brandon Keener, he could deliver a certain sly, humorous, romantic line I wouldn't have otherwise written, but now I knew the actor could do it. Or Kathleen wrote Caden, and I know she sat there with you in her head all the time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, Raphael, this is exactly how Raphael will deliver it, and we're imagining it. And I think you see it a lot on good, successful TV shows that happens as well. Later in the third, fourth, fifth season, they found that rhythm between writer and actor. Yeah. And I think that definitely happened on Mass Effect for sure. With yourself as well as all the actors.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, something's working. Here we are, right?
I'll throw, I mean, just, you know, having been around from Jade, there's been a real evolution of trust, I would say. When we were... here we go. Hello. When we were first recording for Jade, and this goes back to Knights of the Old Republic, I think that what we were doing fundamentally was overwriting, right? We were writing dialogue that was quite heavy, because we didn't, like, we'd only just started doing voice acting and only just kind of eased into it, and we're like, I don't know if this is going to come across. I don't know if it's going to work. So let's put some more words on there, yeah. And so you got some exchanges that were perhaps a bit longer than necessary by a factor of 10, and. Tell me again about the information you just told me, Preston.
Yeah, the lines have actually, we've been shrinking them down as we've gotten better at getting emotion across through something other than words. Like in the Baldur's Gate days, it's like, I'm angry. right? Like he's going to tell you because all you see is that,
the little
purple dude on the screen there that didn't really do anything, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, but that takes time. Like there's, you know, you and something Mike and I have said, like, well, this is something we need to evolve in the craft of writing at BioWare, but it can take 2-3 projects for some of those changes to get to sort of filter down to where we're happy with the final product. I mean, I think the average word count in Mass Effect 1 was 18 words a line, and it's now down to 9. But you're still getting more emotion, right?
Yeah.
I mean, or there's some scenes where there's no writing at all. It literally just is cinematic direction at this point,
And having the trust of the actors, we'll be able to, okay, you know, if we comment it well enough, we get the directors on board. We've even started, you know, like we'll render the scene out ahead of time, send it down so you guys can play to it, the action that's mm-hmm. happening. Then you'll have to scream like 5 times because you're like, oh, good, I can time that. That stuff helps because it means we don't have to safety cushion as much. And we know the actors are going to be delivering an amazing line. We've been really working on our tech, and we have a massive team of cinematic guys that now can get nuances, glances, you know, sidelong looks, quirks of the lips, stuff like that that normally, again, I am angry would have come across. And the end result is that with all of those things advancing, we've gotten to the point where we're a lot tighter, where we can tell the essential story and rely on actors to actually act. And we've got a great roster to do so.
Yeah, and it's important enough. I mean, obviously narrative is something that we're passionate about and that is critical to our success. But, you know, I didn't really actually – it was like a presentation that one of my guys did at a conference one time where he broke down how much of our design team is actually doing narrative. And between the writers and cinematic designers, it's actually 50%. So, like, of the 50 people that work for me on Mass Effect, half of them were doing story. Either through the writing or the presentation of it, and then the other half were like making the game fun and integrating all that story into the other parts of the game.
Well, I know for our cinematics designers, there's always that impatience to finally get real VO in, because until we have that, we have text to speech, which is this horrible computer generated thing that. Hello, Shepard.
It mangles.
It's actually kind of fun playing the game in development, where everybody sounds like Stephen Hawking.
Especially the love scenes.
Oh, the love scenes.
Yeah. Love scenes with text-to-speeches.
Oh, again,
that's painful.
It is
actually really hard.
And at that point, we're like, oh, God, I'm a terrible writer. This is I'm going to get fired. And then there's this magical moment where we go and we have Raphael and our other actors record it, comes back and... oh, it's all there. And then the cinematic designers can go in and just those little looks, as Mike was mentioning, the little touches where they'll time it to the way you guys phrased something. And that's where the humanity starts to come in.
Like the final encounter with the Elusive Man in Mass Effect 3, we didn't get Martin Sheen's VO until like 3 months
really?
Before we shipped. So that scene was like... and now I will, you know, like it's like, and then Martin Sheen like really nailed that dialogue, and they put it in, and it was just like, wow, it just blows your mind to see the difference. Wow. It's like a order of magnitude better when the VO comes in.
How fan are you of Mass Effect?
How big a fan?
Yeah.
Well, so people ask me whether I play the game after it ships. Generally, I. Well, yeah, I mean, part of that is playing it, right? Like, I'll go home on my own kit, and I'll play the game. I put 3 months into it when we shipped, and I put 150 hours into multiplayer. So,
wow.
I when we ship a game, I play that game. I love, and it's great having a whole other franchise like Dragon Age, because then you can go, I get to play a BioWare game that I didn't work on, and you're like, you just take it and you're able to play it and have fun with it just like a normal fan. It's great. It's a really great experience.
Yeah, and it's since you're addressing everybody, the nice thing for me is that so Preston plays Dragon Age. He'll give me really detailed and thoughtful notes, but also that gut impression, like, okay, this part's awesome, right? And these parts are really working for me. And there's kind of a passion for the kind of games we make, and you see that pretty much out of the studio. We've had some people who are like, whatever, man, I'm just here to make a game. I don't really care. And those people never really last because they don't kind of bring it each day. It's, you know, you got to go inside and find something you care about. And for us, you know, the job is... it's an amazing job. It occasionally requires you to stay late or to put in some extra effort or in the best possible scenario, someone like John or I've had a technical guy come in on the weekend because he just had this idea and couldn't get it out of his head, right? And I need to implement this thing. Give me a minute, you know? And you're like, why are we even here? And it's like, because I wanted to be. And that level of engagement is a big part of it. And if you get if you can hire people that are fans, not blind fans, they're able to give critique, they're able to go through, and Preston and I can give feedback on each other's experiences. But we do it from a place of absolute adoration, because I've logged a lot of multiplayer hours too. Yeah. Then the end result is that you do get a company where the culture is fairly consistent. We understand, I know why you did what you did, and we can look at it and learn from one another and have really open dialogue and be big fans of each other's work. And I mean, I love the stuff. I mean, good God, Garrus. Yeah. I want to go shooting on the Citadel every day. If that's can we make that? But that kind of stuff is really fantastic. And if nothing else, it's great to have Preston's team raising the bar, because I'll occasionally wander in and be like, so, did everybody play Citadel? Please do. You know, it's so good. We need to learn from it. We need to see what they've done. And then we have the unique and awesome advantage of being able to wander down and go, John, so, okay, what was up with that, and how the hell did you pull that off? Right? And that's the amazing part.
Yeah, I mean, in the writer room, we're all huge fans of it. I came to work to BioWare to work on Mass Effect. I'd played Mass Effect 1. I didn't work for BioWare. I was just a fan. And just fell in love with the game, the universe, everything about it. And, you know, got that lucky break to come work for them. So here I was, you know, big fan of it, wondering what a Prothean would talk like and look like. And next thing I know, okay, you're writing a Prothean. So it was almost a felt responsibility, really. Like, I can't mess this up. This is a big chance. And I know what it means to fans to first get to meet a Prothean, for example, the first scene you'll have. I knew how important that was to me as well as to the fans. So I wanted to make sure that passion was there that I felt, and I know every other writer feels that way. And as Mike said, if they don't, they generally wouldn't last very long at BioWare.
Yeah, I'm a huge nerd overall, comic books and movies and everything, but I grew up on sci-fi. I've learned to love fantasy. You know, Dragon Age is an awesome series. I'm really looking forward to Dragon Age 3, but I was a sci-fi kid. I watched the original Star Trek movies, Star Wars movies, Space 1999, Battle Beyond the Stars, you know, all this kind of... I was a huge sci-fi nerd. So when Mass Effect came around, it was amazing being able to work on Knights of the Old Republic. Like, even tiny little tangent that I was somehow working with George Lucas was amazing. But then we were able to make our own science fiction universe, which was great. And being on the periphery of watching the team work.
And ironically, I'm the exact opposite. I love fantasy. And I came up through fantasy, and then I was working on Neverwinter, and they were like, well, we want you to go work on Knights of the Old Republic. And I was actually like, it's Dungeons and Dragons, man. Like, that's where I want to stay. So it's ironic, right? Like, and I think the other nice thing is that Mike and I come from very different backgrounds in terms of our development. Like, Mike came up through writing, and I came up through gameplay and through systems design. So we're able to offer each other that high-level critique from a point of view of someone that's like, you know, the writers will vary on about, you know, I just cannot critique writing in the same way that Mike can. I cannot get in there and I can say, I don't like this. You know, I can give vague, you know, vague, this is not doing it for me. You know, really helpful feedback like that.
Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much don't you like it?
Oh, God. You know, he's coming in here. Like, I actually had a cinematic designer. I walked into the room and he just went blank. And... oh, God, he's coming to talk to me. Like, you know, it's because he's going to give me vague, unpurposeful, you know, feedback. So it's nice having that, you know, that collaboration with Mike to be able to give each other feedback in each other's franchises.
Well, I do want to give lots of time for fan questions. We'll get to those right away. But just before we get to fan questions, we were talking about being huge nerds and loving our different things. For the rest of the panel, I'll go first just to get mine out of the way and give you time to think of who was... For what we've done at BioWare, who have you been particularly thrilled to be even tangentially working with? Like, for me, growing up as a huge nerd, in Jade Empire, there was a character named Lord Ponce von Fontelbottom, the Magnificent Bastard. And those of you that remember him, remember he was voiced by John Cleese.
which was amazing. So for me, as a huge Monty Python nerd, it was like, in a tiny, tiny way, I'm working with John Cleese. So for me, that was a huge nerd-out moment. Who have you been particularly thrilled? I mean, obviously, Raphael, because he's up here. But who else have you thought, wow, we actually got Martin Sheen to be in one of our games? Or who would it be for you guys?
I think, you know, I was a huge fan of The West Wing. So when Casey told me that we were going to get Martin Sheen to do The Elusive Man, I was kind of like,
so cool.
You know.
Squee.
You know. So I thought that was pretty cool. Straight up, that was pretty interesting. You know, I was, because I don't actually get to deal with the voice actors a lot. I get to hear a lot of the stories and whatnot coming out of the booth. But that one I was very excited by, I have to say. You know what? I met Raphael just a year ago. I don't get to meet the voice actors. The guys go to the cons and stuff and meet them, and they sometimes bring me back autographs, but I don't, you know, I kind of live in a different place, so.
We have a department at BioWare run by Carolyn Livingston. We've mentioned Carolyn a number of times, and she's amazing. But she and her team work with the actors a great deal.
I have a philosophy with let professionals be professionals and do their job, and we have amazing, the writers do a great job, Caroline does a great job. Casey is very much involved and passionate about that aspect of the game. So it allows me to, you know, it's like, okay, I know you guys are nailing it over there, so just do that, and I'll worry about the gameplay, multiplayer, stuff like that.
This is going to be a weird one because he's an extremely prolific voice actor, so it's kind of a weird choice. But when I was growing up, I grew up on a farm, so it was, you know, very rural. My parents were very supportive of my nerdity, but it was kind of hard to come by when you lived in the country. There weren't a lot of cons. You didn't, you know, get to see the cool stuff. You were baling hay, you know, that kind of thing. And so the thing is, I would also have the school bus, you know, ride home from public school. And I remember, you know, it was a good day if the driver had hurried along and I got home for 4:00. And I would be kind of just sprinting up my incredibly long country driveway to get inside in time to catch Robotech. And just thunk down and be like, oh, Robotech. And yeah, so yeah, the people who love it, and the people who don't love it probably tried to watch it and went, ah, because it was a simpler time. It partly holds up pretty well if you ignore mid-May. So the nice thing for me was, you know, I'd watch, you know, kind of all through the series and whatever. And when we were working on Jade, I had written Sky, and, you know, he was kind of my first big character, and I was, you know, completely daunted by the whole thing. And then Caroline was going through auditions, and it picked up Cam Clark. And I was like, God, where do I know Cam Clark's voice from? I mean, where do I... It's Max goddamn Sterling. And Lancer, but Max Sterling. And so just this very niche bit of nerd in me went, again, the squee for an evening. And then I realized I was kind of wondering. I'm like, we got Max Sterling. And people would look at me like, why are you even? And I'm like, okay, well, whatever. It's cool for me. And so there you go. Cam Clark.
That's cool. I got to meet Mark Meer at Dragon Con. I was going to say in Atlanta. Atlanta Con, no, it's Dragon
weird.
Con.
It's weird, they knew that.
Yeah, they were there. Yeah, they were there.
I know you were there.
He's fantastic. He's the funniest. He's so freaking funny. And then Jennifer Hale, I've met several times. Again, just they're just both wonderful actors. They're so good at what they do. And they're just delightful people. And it's just so fun to be a part of their community.
For me, I think the very first bit of writing I did when I got hired at BioWare was we called it The Story So Far. It was a video we put out on YouTube, which summed up the events of Mass Effect 1 for people who hadn't played it so they could play 2. And I was asked to write this, so I'm writing it, and then at one point I asked my boss, Mac, who's going to voice this? Oh, it's going to be Martin Sheen. And we're recording him in a couple days, so you should probably be there in the booth. Really? So I'm in the booth, and Martin is reading it, and they're looking to me like, is that good enough? Do you want to tell Martin? And so for a little bit there, I'm directing Martin Sheen, and like, really? First 2 weeks of BioWare, and I'm directing Martin Sheen? Okay. And then after that, it was such a pleasure. Every week didn't go by where next week we're recording Edie. So that's Tricia Helfer, right? I'm a huge Battlestar Galactica fan. So I got to meet her through that. Next week we're recording Seth Green, which... probably the best VO sessions of all are with Seth Green. I wish I could have been on more of them, but, you know, Joker seems really funny, and we get credit for writing funny Joker lines, but the fact is Seth's just taking the little bit of funny we had in there, and then he just improvises and makes it, you know, 1,000% more funny. So we're often going back and having to rewrite our dialogue so that the subtitle conforms to what Seth, you know, here's what he would really say. So that, you know, it was fantastic being in on all these guys that I'd, you know, been fans of their work, Family Guy, right? That's Seth Green. Love him.
And the funny thing about Seth is from what I heard, is he kind of puts this outward-facing kind of, you know, I'm kind of like, don't care about stuff and whatever. But he's like amazingly professional. Like he gets in there, he knows exactly what he needs to do, and he just like pounds stuff out really, really fast. Like he has like a really high line count for like a single session. He'll just blaze through a ton of stuff, improvising a lot of it. But he's very professional.
And then I think there was a week where we started hitting the squad mates. And, you know, again, as a fan of the series, this was the first chance I'd had to be involved. So we'd have the Caden session, and I would met you through a VO booth, and I just met Caden, and Rex would come in, and Garrus would come in, and Liara, and that was the fan in me going, I just had a session with Rex, and he said, my dialogue.
Awesome, but we want to have time for your questions. So if you have a question, please raise your hand. Hillary and I are going to walk around with the mic. Whoa. We'll pass you the mic. Please put it close to your face. You don't necessarily need to swallow. But please get it nice and close. We are recording this to be a podcast later. We want to get your questions. So please raise your hand. Hillary, you pick the first one.
Raphael, you said before that you auditioned for Caden. Were you on a short list, though, because of your work as Karth?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I might have been. I might have been. I mean, one might even say that might actually be a deterrent. I'm not sure. I know that. I mean, obviously, we have a relationship now, and they thankfully like to rehire their actors. So I'm happy about that.
So I can't speak to that specific, but I will say that if we have an actor that we know, you know, is consistent, delivers well, wide range, you know, can you know, run their gamut of emotions, they tend to go in a pool. And, you know, the danger, we don't want to overuse all of them, you know. Okay, well, yeah, yeah. We've got a block of serious badasses that, yes, it's very tempting to use them all the time. But, like, you know, if Dragon Age 2 had come out and she was also the voice of the female protagonist, that'd be a little weird, right, if she was Lady Hawk. So we have to be careful on that stuff. But, yeah, once we've got a relationship with an actor, again, like I was saying earlier, it's trust. And it's like, okay, we're going to get what we need out of this guy and this girl. And so it certainly is marks in your favor. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks for now. Thanks for the question.
Next question right here.
Hi. I'm a local actor. I do a fair amount of, you know, local indie film and then a little bit of theater in the background and things like that. I really want to do voiceover at some point in the future, though. I love video games. I love animated, both movies and TV. My question to you, Raphael, is I'm assuming you have an audio reel. And how do you pick two things about it? Number one, how do you choose what to put on your demo reel? Is it things that you've done in the past, or is it things that you want to read to give people an idea of what you sound like? And also, I know you also said you're not this kind of guy, that you have I don't want to say limited because you're a very great actor, but you have a certain sound that you have with your voice that you don't do a large vocal range. If you are going to be doing a reel, should an actor do a large vocal range to show someone what they could do?
Yeah, I mean, invariably your agent will have a point of view on that. I mean, I have I do a lot of narration as well for National Geographic, and then I do sort of commercials, for whoever will have me, and then I do animation. If in the animation sort of reel that I made, I at least initially I wrote everything. So I had bad guys and good guys and young guys and old guys and, you know, I'm good with accents, so I did a lot of accents, and I, you know, played with different. I mean, I'm obviously for Caden, I'm working in the middle or the lower part of my register, but I'm, you know, I was able to kind of go all over and give a range. And I would imagine that would be useful, specifically not only for your agent, but also then for people to sort of see, okay, what this is. I think the trick probably is just just to keep it short. To keep it somewhere in the 1 minute range max, even though that seems kind of quick, but just to give a nice big overview.
Yeah, when we were casting for Javik and for Eve, the female Krogan, we put together very short scripts that here's the quiet moment where you're talking to Eve about her past. Here's the moment when Eve's in danger, and here's the moment when Eve is angry and taking charge. Similar for Javik. Like, we needed a range because we were getting actors who might hit one of them, but if they couldn't hit all of them, you know, we knew the game's going to need the range. So it was important to show that.
So some of the screaming, like, you know, and some of then that. Some of the, and some of the quiet, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you all for being here. I'm a voice actor and a fan, so obviously video games are the sort of work that I want to do. I've done commercials, I've done narrations, but this is what I want to do. So I don't live in a great area for it. I live in Washington, D.C. So I've been networking very aggressively. But I know at some point I'm going to have to move on. I don't know where you're from, Raphael, but I've heard a lot of things about New York, Seattle, Montreal, and Los Angeles. What's the best place to be, and how much does it matter to be in that place?
Gee whiz. I mean, I wish I really know the exact answer to that. I mean, I know, obviously, I'm from New York, and I live in Los Angeles now. But honestly, with the miracle of the internet, you don't have to be anywhere, do you? I mean, essentially, if you can find an agent who can submit you, and you can sort of move from there, it seems like that would be – it's about kind of, I guess – Maybe the benefit of being in one of the bigger cities is that you have an agent who's a little bit closer to something like BioWare, who they will actually, I mean, because clearly you've got people submitting now from all over the world, right? So how do I get listened to? And then having an agent who can maybe have, you know, relationships and or access there, that can be valuable. But I don't see why you can't be in D.C. I mean, I know a lot of National Geographic comes out of D.C. and there are other, and certainly there's a huge local market there. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I've worked in LA and not worked in LA. You know what I mean? And same in New York. So it's yeah.
Yeah, I'll say that on Mass Effect, most sessions I know I was involved in, we were looping into LA. It just seemed like, at least for this particular kind of work, video games, it all seemed to be coming mostly out of LA.
Yeah. We've done like our studio setups. We've done New York. We've done LA, and we've done London. Those are
Dragon Age. I guess you guys do a lot of London.
We do a lot of, I mean, both the French accents and the English accents. We go to Europe to get them as authentic as possible. You know,
it's rare, but in like emergency, they'll get somebody who's like, they'll drag them into a studio somewhere, you know, close to the south of France and get them to do something. But that's really rare. It is literally like the big, you know, professional studios that
we work. Part of that is because we've worked with the directors there and set up this VEDA setup, which we know it gets better performances because it's a better atmosphere for the actors. Thank you for confirming that. I know Caroline's heard that feedback too. It's just so good to hear in reality. Because you can get that equivalent of the crosstalk, but that requires hardware, requires monitors in the booths and because, you know, it's all computer driven. Directors, we often have on-site directors. Caroline will work often from home, but we do have other directors we work with. And they need to get to know how to work with these kind of non-linear scripts we produce as well, right? Because think every time Shepard talks or the dialogue wheel pops up, it's like scene, divergence, reconvergence. And so, you know, that looks weird on a script, I imagine, the first time.
It does. It's weird. When you drop in and, like, there's one line and you really have no context for it, and you have to sort of just do that line and then move on to the next one that has no context, and you just trust that essentially that it'll go right where it needs to be.
So because of that, we do rely a little more on the tech, which means that the location does matter. So for BioWare specifically, I know L.A., London,
tends
and
to be LA.
To some degree New York.
Though that being said, Mark Muir is from Edmonton. He's a local, so Commander Shepard is, you know, we got him right there.
Awesome, thank you. Next question.
Yep.
Hi. What are some of the writers among you, what are some of the inspirational universes or characters that may help you in writing characters?
Batman.
I don't write.
It's just all Batman, all the way down.
It all comes back to Batman.
It's all Batman, yeah. Yeah, yeah, his parents are dead, you see. sorry.
This is why
and that's
is
why John's still
VR.
A writer, and I've moved on to
taking a swing at Batman.
No, I'm not
taking a swing.
No, I'm not. No, I have the deepest respect for Batman.
Sorry. The inspirations are a huge range in terms of what we do. Like large-scale stories, you know, when you distill all fiction down, they say there's seven key stories, man versus man, man versus nature, blah, blah, blah. That really, really diminishes the art behind it, I think. But definitely you tend to go, I think, when we're doing it, and John, you can dig in on what the characters deliver, but we tend to think about like the games in terms of what fantasies can they fulfill. And not all fantasies are like, yeah, and then you win everything, and then awesome stuff happens, and you get a unicorn. Like, it's like, that's a fantasy, sure, but really, it's like, what are scenarios? Like, you know, so in my day-to-day life, I cannot endure a siege, right? And that's kind of cool. We've seen movies where it's kind of cool. Now, what if I could have an active role in that, right? What if I could help lay out the defenses? What if I could position the troops? What if I could give the orders? What if I could be in command? And those kinds of things are like a scenario and an emotion that we think would be inspiring and that could integrate well with gameplay so that it's like, okay, cool. I see how that would work with the experience we're trying to produce. And then you ask yourself, what characters would help make that, you know, not necessarily bigger, but make that more impactful, right? Because it's, you know, someone you like who might die or someone who, you know, you're the grizzled veteran who can help lay it down for you and he's got that massive scar and his voice is raspy because, you know, he's been there before. That's kind of what we look for is the overall experience that caters to something that you may not be able to articulate you need, but when you get there, you're like, oh, man, this is really cool. I haven't done this before or I've never done it before like this. And then...
Yeah, I think... You know, like, every writer's different. On Mass Effect 3, the mission where you cure the genophage, which was something I had written, and when I was trying to think about it, though, it was a lot of inspirations that came from... For me, I'm very filmic in my background, so movies have a big influence. So I was thinking that in terms of, certainly, the Tuchanka mission, actually a bit of Lawrence of Arabia, this idea of an outsider going in and unifying these quarreling factions, a bit of... the movie Children of Men, if you've ever seen that, with a there's a so that so she's the only pregnant woman left. So there's a bit of that in Eve, and then at the end with the way Morden sacrifices himself, Patrick Weeks, another writer, and I, very much inspired by Star Trek II, Spock's death, in the sense that a kind of noble sacrifice could have this meaningful impact on the viewer. So all of that just kind of came together in this like stew of inspiration that you just kind of cook and hope it all works out and add up, you know, your own spin on it and, you know, and hope everyone enjoys it.
Great. Thank you. Hillary, next question.
Hi. Hello. Hello.
Yep.
Okay, good. Yeah, yep. Yeah. Fantastic. Hi, I'm Jacob. Thank you for your games. They are bitching. Now, my question would be for Raphael. I have done voice work for some independent games and such. I have gone out and attempted to get an agent. And how do you select one that isn't going to take you for a ride or take advantage of you so that you know that this person is going to be working for you to get you out there? And once you have an agent, how do you get them to target folks that you might want to work for? Like, I don't know, BioWare.
I sort of want to answer by saying it's kind of like dating, you know. How do you know that she's really going to love you? I don't, you know. I wish I knew.
Well,
I wish
in your
I
case,
knew.
It's written for you, so it's okay.
You know, I mean, obviously, one. Hopefully, you know, you can do your research on the agent and find out who else is on their list. What kinds of, you know, are the other actors on the list, are they sort of in a, do they have a caliber or are they where, even if they're way above me, do I aspire to be there where they are? That would be probably important. The next thing is just that you sense that they kind of get you. And that's, again, that's a sort of an ineffable kind of quotient.
Like, and they return your phone calls.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny about agents because obviously the most valuable thing they have is time because there's, you know, there's one of you and there's, you know, maybe 500 or 600 of their other clients. So they have to sort of apportion that out. You know, I tend to try to sort of be present but not a pest and try and sort of check in but always be respectful of their time. I don't sort of say, hey, how's it going? You know, what do you do? You know, I mean, I tend to sort of talk fast, get to the point, and move on, you know, because, again, I realize that they're working and they're their daytime hours are hopefully devoted to getting me a job. I've had good agents and I've had terrible agents, and it is a process in a way, just like dating, where you sort of start to get a sense of kind of like, oh no, this is going to go bad. There's some possibility here. And then there is some kind of a leap of faith as well that one has to sort of do. You have to sort of kind of go, okay, I'm going to stick this out and see how this goes. And then hopefully it will come to some things. I think they also, you know, they do, there is, I mean, this is just straight up, you know, there are ultimately more, more people than there are places at the table, right? So, you know, the onus is then back to you, that you have to then also, you know, show up, do your work and kill it. And that's where they then will potentially lose interest if there's long spates of time where you're not getting work. And that's, it's so frustrating and can be agonizing, but that's also a sort of a function of kind of how the business works too.
Well, that's awesome, but we are sort of running low on time, so I think that's a great question to end on. Directly pertains to voice acting. Thank you very much to our panelists for coming out today, especially Raphael for coming out to us. It's great being able to bring him to Boston to meet our fans. Thank you, everybody, for coming out tonight.
This is Raphael Sparge. You're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
So that's it from the BioWare base, but we here at Nerd Appropriate would like to thank BioWare for allowing us to bring this content to you guys. And if you are new to this site, Ash, why don't you give them a little rundown of who we are and what we've been up to.
So we are nerdappropriate.com, and we do a podcast by the name of Rated NA. And we're actually coming up on our big 100th episode. So we've been doing this for about 2.5 years. Do not listen to the early episodes, please. they get better. They age like a fine wine or cheese.
You should absolutely take a look through our archives of different podcasts where we've had some amazing special guests from the BioWare universe. People like Patrick Weeks, David Gator, Mike Gamble, Allie Hillis, Courtney Taylor, Jennifer Hale. It doesn't get any better than that. So we're super honored to have such amazing special guests and, of course, to BioWare, as always.
Absolutely. And that's not all. If you've been listening to these podcasts, you've probably heard our theme song that starts and ends every podcast. And that theme song was composed by Jimmy Henson, who was one of the composers on Mass Effect 2. Definitely visit his Bandcamp, Big Giant Circles. Check out his website. Plenty more Mass Effect music and other cool tunes on Big Giant Circles.
So thanks for listening. And of course, if you are digging this content, follow us at Nerd Appropriate or follow BioWare and let them know that you're digging the stuff that we're putting out. And as always, subscribe to the podcast and you can keep getting these wonderful little nuggets of joy in your podcast feeds. So thank you guys so much. Until next time.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.